Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we have Todd McShay. Todd. On to talk about the NFL draft. We're finally here. It is draft week. We are going to recap a little UFC. A lot of storylines coming out of that. Maybe some baseball talk. We have Who's Back of the Week and a Monday reading. And it's all brought to you by our friends at BetterHelp.com. Listen, at Barstool Sports, we truly love and appreciate our listeners. We love you. All the AWLs out there, we love you.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by BetterHelp.com. If you want to get into therapy, if you want to talk to a therapist, online chat with a therapist, you don't even have to leave your house. BetterHelp.com/PMT, 10% off for our listeners for the first month at BetterHelp.com/PMT. Today is Monday, April 26th, and it is draft week, and Roger Goodell going to get all up in everyone's fucking grill.
All up in the guts.
Love it.
Players are going to be allowed to hug Roger Goodell this year.
He's
going
to go so hard on his first couple. You know he's been, he just wants to touch. He just wants to touch these young men who are going to be under the tutelage of Roger Goodell, and he's going to change their lives. He's going to back slap, butt slap, maybe even a little mwah-mwah kiss.
Yeah.
A little French.
I hope that they do. Like, there was one year where he came pretty close to kissing a player.
Yeah.
Sometimes Roger Goodell, he just likes new players being in the league, and he's watched the tape.
He's
got to
make
guys
up for it.
Yeah. He's definitely had, like, some intricate handshake planned for the last year. We're not going to get to see him down in his basement again this year. Maybe that's what maybe the first person across the stage will be the green M&M. Mm-hmm. And Roger Goodell,
the horny
just,
M&M.
Yeah. Roger, bonk. Just, yeah. Just butt fucker.
Eat it up.
You guys think he'll make any more false promises about donating to charity and sitting next to him during a game in his man cave?
Yeah, probably.
Wouldn't
why not?
Put it past him.
Yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. I mean, once you do it once and everyone's like, damn, that was really nice, and then you don't have to do it, then you just do it all the time, right?
People don't really talk about that enough.
No, they
true.
Don't.
It's a good point.
Is it?
And I was going to match that too.
Right.
Me too.
I was going to match it,
but I was going to give my share to the control room.
Right. Exactly.
It's tough.
$250,000. I was going to match if Roger did it, but I can't now. So. That's expired. My offer has expired.
Do you think it's disrespectful to Roger Goodell if a player chooses not to attend the draft?
Ooh.
You think Roger looks at them for the rest of their career like, you had your chance to hug me and you didn't?
I think Trevor Lawrence isn't going to attend, right? I'm pretty sure he's not attending.
He's not attending. It's
the old, Joe Thomas
Joe
going
Thomas.
On the go fishing. Yeah.
That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. If I were to be drafted, I would do. I would go fishing with Joe Thomas's dad instead of being drafted.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, that would probably be better than sitting in a green room. And having to, because he is going to go out of control hug.
Yep.
His first one, he's not going to hold anything back. And now, are there fans going to be at the draft?
Yes.
So, boos are back?
Boos are back, yes. Roger Goodell.
Oh, remember, my God, I'm cringing now thinking about last year. Remember when he had the digital boos and he's like, bring it on.
Uh-huh.
I love to hear it. Oh. But either way, the draft week is great. I know it has felt like it's taken forever. It definitely feels like it should have been last week or the week before. But we're finally here. Draft week. Tons of NFL talk. We have Todd McShay coming up. I'm getting more and more nervous about which quarterback the Bears are going to reach for. And then
I'm calling it right now. They're going to draft Kyle Trask. And then he's going to stink. and your life will be made a living hell by a quarterback who sucks that looks exactly like Billy Football.
Well, you know, if it was really truly to be a living hell, it would be that he's good for a little bit, and then everyone keeps their job.
Yeah, it would also be very Bears, though, to do the exact same thing that they did with Glennon a couple years ago.
Yeah.
They signed Andy Dalton. Yeah. It's your job. You're QB1. They said he was QB1, right?
He is QB1.
Yeah. AD14.
AD14.
And then they draft the quarterback who immediately supplants him. That would be very funny.
Yeah. I'm excited, though. For draft night is always fun. We'll be doing I don't even think we'll have a guest on Friday because we're going to have all the stuff to recap from the draft.
I really want to see the Raiders get back into Raiders, like, full swing, where they draft the fastest wide receiver.
Yeah.
Maybe even trade up for the guy. Probably the first wide receiver who will ever wear number one in the NFL. The Raiders spend a fortune on the draft value chart. That's actually something we need to dive into a little bit, is the Jimmy Johnson draft value chart. Because apparently, like 40 years ago, Jimmy Johnson just sat down, had a couple of Captain Morgans and Cokes, and just put numbers next to every pick. And then every coach is like, yeah, I'm just going to go with what Jimmy said.
Well, I mean, he also made the greatest trade of all time in the draft. So I think that's more why people are like, Jimmy Johnson's a genius.
It's just funny that Jimmy Johnson is the guy that we look at as being like the math analytical wizard of the NFL draft.
What was the actual trade? I want to look for it.
It was Herschel Walker.
Yeah, Herschel Walker. I know. I can't remember how many picks they ended up getting, but it literally was his draft chart built the dynasty of the Cowboys off that one trade.
Yeah.
Herschel Walker, I'm pulling it up right now.
Hank, did you see your boy Tom Brady weighed in? He essentially wrote a blog about how he doesn't like wide receivers being allowed to wear low numbers.
Yeah, and all of his points made a lot of sense.
Yeah, what were the points again?
Just let anyone wear any numbers. Why do linemen have to wear specific numbers? Why can't anyone just wear any numbers? Why even wear numbers at all?
Yeah.
Let's just give the teams two different colors.
So I'm looking it up. There were players traded, obviously. Herschel Walker went to the Vikings. And then in exchange, so the Cowboys received a couple defensive players from the Vikings as well. In exchange, the Cowboys received Minnesota's first, second, and sixth round pick in 1990. First and second pick in 1991, and then the first, second, and third round pick in 1992. That's fucking insane.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's so Jimmy Johnson, you are a genius. Now, going back to his draft board, it really, like, I'm sure he is a genius for creating it and everyone following it, but really, it should at the bottom of it be like, just find someone dumb enough to give you all your picks.
Yes, trade a running back for
every
entire
pick in the draft. Yeah, for the next 3 years.
That's the new money ball of the NFL. If you can find a team that will just trade everything for a running back that you think will change your
people
franchise.
People would freak if this trade happened right now.
Yeah,
because like even, I mean, the fact that it was first, it was 3 years consecutive of first and second round picks. That's fucking insane. Well, and thanks to the Vikings because they made the Cowboys what they were in the 90s.
What coach these days do you think would be most likely to trade their entire draft for a really good running back? I feel like it might be Gruden. He might do it for Derrick Henry. Just because of his size. I feel like Gruden is a guy that respects mass.
Yeah, Gruden. I mean, Sean McVay would trade every pick for any, like, he'll just trade picks just because they don't exist anymore for him. I'm trying to think. Pete Carroll seems like a guy who's going to try to do a quick fix at some point.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm just going to trade everything for some sick, I don't know, tight end or maybe Kyle Pitts. Like, we just got to, because they're in that weird spot. I think it's always a situation where you're trying to placate a star and also rebuild on the fly, and you're like, let me just hit this button and hope it works.
You might see a new coach doing something dumb.
Yeah.
Like the guy in Atlanta. What's his name? Smith.
Arthur Smith, who...
Thickless cage.
We just need to just throw this out there every time. His dad is what? The FedEx? Like
the CEO of FedEx, I think. Or the founder of FedEx, something like that.
If you're asking, does this guy love football? Yeah, he does. Because his dad is the CEO of FedEx and he could have just been rich.
Exactly.
Instead, he's like, I want to grind tape and be an offensive coordinator for a bunch of years and then hopefully get the dignity of being able to stand on the sidelines as my team collapses and Arthur Blank breathes down my neck.
Yes.
Like, yeah. That's all he signed up for.
Right, right. So he had, it's like running away to join the circus. He rebelled against his family by becoming a football guy instead of becoming Tom Hanks from Castaway.
Right, and now he's the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. But yeah, that guy, since it is season of does this guy love football, I think it's pretty fair to say that he loves football.
Yeah, but you could always count on a new coach trying to outsmart the entire rest of the league. Be like, no one's ever thought of this before. And it's usually a mistake that's been made like hundreds of times.
Right. Zig when everyone zags.
But not recently.
That's why I it would be so sick if the 49ers just drafted Kyle Pitts.
I know.
Just went double tight end.
I have been thinking about that a lot recently. Face.
Yeah, because Kyle Shanahan's the one guy, one of the only guys who can do it, and everyone won't say, wow, that was so stupid. They'll say, oh my God, what does he see that we don't see?
Yeah, he could have C.J. Beathard play all year next year.
Just
with
cash
those two
in.
Tight ends, it'd be sick.
Yeah, cash in on the reputation right now.
Yep.
All right.
You know what I want to hear? I want to hear Brett Favre's take on players wearing different numbers.
Dude, Brett Favre,
putting takes out there.
I'm going to give credit to Brett Favre. I fucking hate his guts. It probably came through when we had the interview with him. Nothing to do with politics, but because he's a Green Bay Packer. But he has figured out a way to create his own ecosystem of saying something inflammatory and then going on every show to answer to it.
Yeah.
It's actually genius. I don't think he knows that he's doing that on purpose, but he says something on his podcast, everyone gets mad, and then the next day it's like Brett Favre with Colin Cowherd, Brett Favre with Skip Bayless, Brett Favre on like all these shows. So it's probably Bus Cook doing all this. But, yeah, Brett Favre has figured out a way to just keep his name just constantly trending.
Well, he keeps in the news cycle because what happens is he'll say something on his podcast, he'll get invited on the show, and then on the show he'll usually, like, halfway apologize for what he said.
Yeah.
And then TMZ writes an article that's like, Brett Favre apologizes for what he said on his podcast. Then he does another podcast, and he talks about apologizing for it, says something else dumb, and then he goes on another show to apologize for that. It's actually brilliant.
Yeah. He's hacked the system. He knows how to get people talking about Brett Favre. All right, so other thing we want to talk about. The UFC had an incredible fight on Saturday night. I watched the highlights because I went to sleep. Total dad move, I know. Hand up. I was still tired from Rough and Rowdy the night before. But it was – so there's a couple of things that come out of it. One is Jake Paul kind of owns Dana White.
A little bit.
Now, we
got
side
up
with
in his face.
Dana White. So Jake Paul shows up. Everyone says, fuck you, Jake Paul. He makes a whole like scene of it. Everyone's talking about him. Daniel Cormier gets in his face. And I got to give – by the way, Billy is here. This is Billy's last week before he goes away and finds himself. I got to give Billy credit because if you saw Jake Paul afterwards said, Daniel Cormier, like, let's sign the deal. You're shorter than me. I'll take you. And I was like, God damn it. Like, Billy's right. Like, that's how you do fights.
Do you think that – who do you think would win, Billy?
I think Daniel Cormier would win.
Yeah, but remember, he can't lay down on top of Jake Paul.
True. I don't know. I think
it's also the last MMA fighter to fight Jake Paul. Look what happened.
Mm-hmm. Ben Askren, who we're going to disc golf with at some point.
Oh, can I come?
Yes.
Well, if you're back from Eat, Pray, Chug.
Mm-hmm.
Sabbatical. It's a sabbatical.
You should write a screenplay. When you get back from about what you learned finding yourself in America.
How Billy got his chug back. We'll make a movie out of it. But yeah, so the reason why I say Jake Paul kind of owns Dana White a little bit, he got Dana White to talk about him in the post-fight press conference, and he points out, which it actually kind of made sense. He's like, hey, I've done my third fight, pay-per-view fight, in my career. It's not even, like, real boxing in the terms of, like, the heavyweight or a belt, right? And he points out that he has made more money than every other UFC fighter before him, except for Khabib and McGregor in their fight.
Yeah.
So he basically is like, Dana, why don't you pay your guys so they don't have to come fight me and make their big payday? And Conor McGregor, by the way, made his big payday boxing Floyd Mayweather.
Right. Was McGregor taking a shot at us, or was he taking a shot at Jake Paul when he said, like, the blogger boys that are trying to put on fights?
Was,
you see that UFC.
He was taking a shot
better.
At Kevin Durant.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I would love to see that fight. I would watch Jake Paul fight anybody at this point because he's done a great job just
promoting.
I want to finally see him get his ass kicked by somebody.
Right.
But he's a great promoter. You know what he should do? He should announce like a mystery fight one night. show up and then just be like, I will fight anybody in attendance that wants to fight me consecutively, one after the other, and we'll see how many people in a row I can knock out. Just people in the stands that want to fight me, I will take all comers. I would watch the fuck out of that.
Yes, that would be incredible. Billy would be there, ready to go. I just think that Jake Paul, like, people don't really like him. Everyone's screaming, fuck Jake Paul. But when he points out the money disparity, he kind of has Dana White there.
He's got a good point, yeah.
Yeah, guys, like, he was like, make the best fight at UFC and pay them a shitload of money, because what I'm doing right now is I'm paying whoever fights me a lot of money, and I'm getting paid a lot of money, and I'm proving that there's an alternative thing out there. So, I don't know. I'm sure Dana White's like a master at these things, so it could even be a work, and we could see Jake Paul get his ass kicked in an MMA ring.
I don't think that Dana does works, though.
Yeah.
I think when you see Dana's entire life is a work.
True.
For the most part. He's worked himself into a shoot of just living.
Right.
But it worked. I mean, it does. He's made a lot of money doing it. He's got a good business model for Dana White.
Yep.
The UFC is essentially like a Dana White store. It's like, come here, give money to get into the Dana White store, and then I'll give like a little commission to the salespeople that are out on the floor.
Well, the guys who actually get knocked out.
And he's a good businessman, so I think he understands that if he had Jake Paul do something with the UFC, he would make a shitload of money, but he does have that edge to him where he's like, if I dislike somebody enough, I will turn down their money.
Yes.
Because he doesn't need it.
No, he does not need it, but Jake Paul is, I mean, he said he would box an MMA fighter. He knocked out the MMA fighter. Whatever you want to say about Ben Askren, who he was a champion, but like maybe he's, you know, over the hill and he coming off injuries and stuff, but Jake Paul has clearly struck a chord with the MMA.
Mm-hmm.
He's a master troll, and he's done master troll things. The other two things to note, Chris Weidman, that leg injury was so fucking horrific. I watched it about 100 times. I'll just be honest with you, because I love watching videos like that. He didn't know his leg was fucked up until he tried to stand on like his shin.
Right, because when you break your shin like that in a kick, it just feels like any other shin kick where you hit somebody else's leg where it hurts, but then you try to step on it and then it just goes 90 degrees out to the side. And I think like double leg fractures are, I was about to say, they're the most painful injury to watch. That'll make me cringe instantly. I think like an elbow bending backwards is worse than that. But I think the tib fib fracture.
Knees are pretty bad. Like I always go back to Willis McGahee.
We're kind of desensitized now when it comes to we've seen too many knee injuries.
Yeah, that one, that leg injury. And the guy who was fighting him, Uriah Hall?
Yeah.
First ever fighter to win a fight without having to throw a single punch. Which is, do you even take a shower?
No, I don't think so.
I think you just kind of wipe down a little and then go to the club.
Yeah, and then Masvidal got sent to the Shadow Realm himself, big time.
That
punch is, I mean, he got baptized. So he got baptized actually with his own spit, because Usman made him like just spit up every single drop of liquid he had in his mouth.
Well, it was his sweat, and I think his trainer was dousing him in water as well, which made the effects that much cooler.
Yeah.
Because you could actually see his soul leaving his body.
Mm-hmm.
And then the worst part about UFC, which I think every UFC fan probably agrees, is the guys obviously are trained to fight till like it's fully called, but there's nothing worse than when a guy gets knocked out and then you see the natural reaction of go hammer him some more, and the ref doesn't get in there fast enough. This, I think it was Herb Dean, got in there fast enough, but you always are like, oh my God, is someone going to die?
So
I'm such a pussy about that, and then I'll watch Chris Weidman's leg snap like 75 times.
You'll knock the guy out, and then you like look over your shoulder at the ref to see if the ref is going to be able to intercept you on your way to try to end this guy's life.
Right.
And if the ref doesn't get you, it's like, hey, that's on you. You got to be willing to step in there.
I think I'm good. I think now that I'm talking through it, leg injuries, I'll watch forever. Head injuries make me squeamish.
They're tough. Do you think that we'll ever get to an instance where somebody gets knocked out, somebody goes in to finish them, the ref jumps on their body, and then the ref gets knocked out by the hammer fist that's coming in?
Yeah, I mean, once we get to like UFC 1000, there's so many things happen.
Yeah.
Why not? Hank, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, the even crazier thing about the leg injury was that the very like fight before, it was basically consecutive kicks. The guy basically broke his nerve on his leg from a kick, and the guy couldn't stand up. The next fight starts leg injury. So there's like two freak leg injuries, like right right back to back.
And did you see the
consecutive kicks?
Canada from the Magic broke his ankle tonight, and there was like he came down. The guy on the Magic. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. Is that how you?
Kenyatta?
Can you pronounce it for me, Jake?
I gotta look it up.
Okay. He came down, broke his ankle, and there was like it was bleeding instantly. It was a bad.
Dwight Howard, Lord carry him now.
Yeah, everyone right now, just do yourself a favor and just take a second out of your morning and be like, thank you God for my legs that I didn't have them snap in a UFC fight or
you know what, Big Cat?
Break in an NBA game.
I would say that the word hero gets thrown around a lot, but you are somewhat heroic for forcing yourself to watch those injuries.
Yeah,
because you're
I love watching.
You're reminding yourself. Uh-huh. Of what these guys put on the line for entertainment. That'll be your cross to bear.
Yeah, no, I'll hand up. I'm a sicko like this, but I don't know. I could watch those injuries over and over. It's just crazy to watch. Like, Chris Weidman's, his bones didn't exist. He was like Gumby.
Yeah, his leg exploded. The one injury I can't watch on replay is the Johnny Knox, the Bears, when he got his back bent backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the back of his head touched the back of his heels.
Yeah,
I can watch that. Devin Kennedy.
Kennedy. I can watch that for sure.
Is there any injury you can't watch? What about when...
Just head injuries are really the ones that I just can't... Those ones I... Like, whenever...
So, in November, you mute Darren Revell when he's doing the John F...
Yes.
Okay.
What was the... Who was, like, basically convulsing in the Texans? Who was it? Was it Hoyer? No. Who got hit so hard? Oh, no, it was TJ Yates-Hell, like 2 years ago. He got hit so hard.
It was Yates-Hell.
He was convulsing. Like, that shit will fuck me up. I can't watch that.
When they go into the fencing reflex and put their hands out.
Yes, that fucks me up.
Oh, the Anquan Boldin one from way back in the day when he got his face broken.
Yes.
And he came back and played like 2 weeks later.
Yes, but any type of ankle, shoulder.
Tom Savage.
Mm. That was it. Tom Absolute Savage.
I love finger dislocation videos.
Yeah.
Because the guy just looks at his finger.
Yeah, it's
and
gone.
It looks bad, uh-huh. And then they go to the sidelines and they just pop it back into place.
Yeah, I should have, Billy, when you come back and start actually doing your job, I'll have you make me a compilation of all the injury videos that I like to watch. And maybe throw in a puke video, too, and then I'll tweet it.
Jesus.
What?
I'll do it.
No, I know. Listen. I'm admitting it's fucked up. Mm. Like, I'm saying it's fucked up.
Are you the guy that, like, finds a new injury video and calls the boys over? It's like, you guys got to watch this.
I do. If I see a really bad injury, like, in real time, I'll definitely be like, yo, you see that shit? That was crazy.
They should make the shin kicks illegal.
You think
so? Wear shin guards like they do in other MMA sports.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, like, is it like the maple bats are breaking more often? Are people's shins starting to shatter more often?
Yeah.
Really? Exactly.
Is that because, like, do you think people are skipping leg day more often?
Yeah, what's going on
there? Literally, guys are just kicking so hard the shin can't evolve fast enough.
Ah, got it. Okay, but, that's interesting.
Now, is there a way to train your shins to be more resilient? Like, if I woke up every morning when I was between the age of, like, 10 and 17 and just hit myself in the shins with like a stick from a tree.
I think you just accidentally hit the coffee table every morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, which I do.
Right.
So are my shins overcalcified to
probably
the point where I could probably fight MMA, no sweat?
Wolverine.
Do you think someone could ever do that where they get metal shin guards in their body?
Yeah.
And like
implants? Like Wolverine.
How would they be able to stop that? I guess
they couldn't. With the RNA technology that we have with CRISPR.
They'd figure it out as soon as they started just breaking everyone's legs with one kick.
So what I'm hearing, in order to make your body super tough and overcalcified, when you're like 11 years old, you just climb into the dryer and press start,
mm-hmm.
and then you just get bumps all over your body, and then you're super tough when you get out.
Correct. The human body craves contact. That's a Yabo for the Dodgers. Great. The Dodgers and the Padres have an awesome rivalry now.
Mm-hmm.
And Trevor Bauer, I don't know why people are surprised with Trevor Bauer's response to Fernando Tatis Jr. being like, yeah, I'm actually happy that he, like, you know, mocked me. And pitchers should stop getting upset when people hit, you know, home runs off of them. That's exactly what I expected out of Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer's a troll, but I never got the impression that he wouldn't be cool with being trolled back.
Right. He's a really good message board user, and he respects game when somebody else is able to troll. He's not the guy that's going to call for the mods.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting triggered.
No,
right.
He's not. He's not calling for the mods at all in this one. He is, I mean, he got owned.
Yes.
That's for, and he'll be like, I did get owned.
All right, so here's his exact quote, which I loved. I thought this was great. He said, when he was asked about Fernando Tatis Jr., he mocked him by showing one eye. Trevor Bauer famously said that sometimes he gets bored, so he only pitches with one eye. He said, I like it. Pitchers who have that done to them and react by throwing at people or getting upset and hitting people or whatever, I think it's pretty soft. If you give up a homer, a guy should celebrate it. It's hard to hit in the big leagues. So I'm all for it, and I think it's important that the game moves in that direction. We stop throwing at people because they celebrated having some success on the field. I fucking love that response.
But then he went back and he found a clip of him before he hit the home run, and you can see Tatis looking down and stealing a sign from the catcher.
Oh.
So now Bauer's mad about that. He's like, he's like, okay, this goes beyond our little back and forth. Which, by the way, is it illegal to look down at a catcher?
That is...
I don't think it's illegal.
I think that... I think that's just...
I think it's Bush League.
Right. I don't think it's illegal either. I think that's just something that happens. You just let it happen. No?
Yeah, the catcher, they should have better signs.
Right, yeah.
Like, if you're getting it's like getting your sign stolen from second base.
Right.
Like, it's part of the game.
They should contact...
That's what happened? He looked at second base? And the guy...
No, that's illegal. I don't even think the example... This is a guy on Twitter, like, really, really reaching.
Yeah.
He looked down, and then the catcher looked up at him. But if the catcher was really, like, nervous that Tatis stole his signs, he could have just called a timeout, or he could have just redone the signs. Like, it wasn't that serious.
I have, yes, he is allowed. Usually the catcher waits for the batter to set up before flashing. If the batter is looking for an advantage, it will definitely be obvious and is frowned upon, like cheating.
Yeah, it's frowned upon. So if you have a guy on illegal. Second base relaying the signs, that's illegal.
Yeah, yeah. But that's Bush League.
I think it's Bush League to look at the catcher. I don't think the guy on second base...
I think it's flipped.
...can relay him.
I think it's Bush League to have a guy relaying him. But it's illegal to look. I didn't realize he was actually looking at the catcher.
I think this person was reaching.
Yeah, okay.
It's John Boy.
I actually want to take back.
I don't know who it was.
I'm
but
just kidding.
What I said John about makes good Trevor videos. Bauer, because Trevor Bauer, he first said, yeah.
He's the best hitter in baseball.
He first said, yeah, I got owned, but then he found this and he did the I'm not owned as he shrank into a corn cob.
Got it.
I think, you know what Bauer's probably going to do? He's probably going to like hit up the Crips or the Bloods in LA and be like, hey, can you guys work with my catcher and give me new signs? That would be a big time Trevor Bauer thing to do, wouldn't it?
Was a rated R Rick Riley joke.
No, I'm actually not joking.
I know.
I think that I could see Trevor Bauer doing something like that.
He'll definitely do something with like weird signs or like blinking or something. But I just love this for baseball. I think Trevor Bauer, this has been my point forever, is that Trevor Bauer, I know people hate him, but he gets people talking. It kind of goes back to, this is kind of the troll episode. Jake Paul is the same way. Like, I don't like Jake Paul, but he gets the conversation going that Dana White should pay his fighters more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like Trevor Bauer, but he gets people, actually, I kind of like Trevor Bauer, but he gets people talking and he gets people's eyeballs onto the screen and people talking about baseball, and that's good for the game.
Yeah, there was also Fernando Tatis Jr. hitting two dingers. Was it the same day that
he hit five and three games?
But he hit two in the same game on the same day that his dad hit two grand slams in the same game against the Dodgers, I think.
Yeah.
Both against pitchers wearing the same number. This was just a stat that Bob Costas, he saw this.
Tim Kirchen was, is Kirchen. Kirchen just went crazy.
Bob Costas gets pink eye from shoving his face so far up the ass at that stat.
Yeah, that's baseball, the quirkiest game out there. You just love it. That's why the journalists love it.
Also, we're entering a golden age of Suns in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Just Suns everywhere.
And just look at the Blue Jays.
Yeah, Blue Jays.
The entire Blue Jays roster.
Did you see what happened with Bo Bichette the other day?
No.
His homer at
Fenway. Oh, yes. That was cool. Bo Bichette hit a homer that landed in front of the gym.
The building.
The building that his dad and his mom met.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's wild.
It's fucking,
it is wild.
It is wild.
That's
wild.
That is wild.
That's for sure wild.
Yeah.
And only, like, I don't know, what is it, 500? No, probably like 300 miles west, Jim Boeheim was probably...
Both in the northeast region.
Not... Mm-hmm. I don't think Buddy was
a gym,
alive by there by then. It was a gym,
yeah.
He wasn't alive then, was he, Buddy?
In the 90s? No.
Well, it's
well,
crazy.
Maybe late 90s.
What's crazy... Yeah.
That's going to fuck me up, by the way, for a long time, that I'm going to think like a 21-year-old was born in 1992. Like, I have not.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not ready for that.
2000s.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
It's like Y2K.
Born in 2000, you're turning 21.
Yeah, there's no one in college next. Like, college basketball won't have anyone who's born before 1998. Wisconsin also.
Yeah.
Brad Davidson was born in 1985.
Davidson and Bohannon will be there until the end of time.
But, yeah, that's going to mess me
What's
up.
What's crazy is that Buddy Boeheim right now plays in the same gym that his dad and his mom were married in.
Whoa. That's wild.
Yeah.
Straight up wild.
It is wild.
Straight up wild. All right. Anything else before Kevin Durant is back? I had a thought today. I'm just excited for the NBA playoffs because maybe it's because of last year with the bubble, but just to see some new courts in action. Like, the Nets are going to play probably till the Eastern Conference final or maybe in the finals, and we haven't seen that in a really long time.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm a big fan of just different courts.
Yeah, I like courts, too. I saw Hank expose himself as a casual today and was like, ooh, this Charlotte court is nasty.
Oh,
it's been nasty,
It's
Hank.
Been awesome. Nasty in a good way?
No,
gross.
Nasty in a gross way.
I love it. I love their jerseys, too.
Their jerseys are nice. I just don't like the, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Wait, how many? I'm gonna look at it again because I think I might.
I said it was revolting, and people were like, "That's not what revolting means."
How many games? How many Hornets games in their entirety do you think Michael Jordan's watched this year?
Probably a few.
Probably like 10.
Yeah, they're actually pretty good.
It'd be funny.
They have a solid team.
It'd be funny if they got to the playoffs and Michael Jordan, like, he signed up for Twitter on the night the playoffs started. He's like, "This court is gross."
It is.
Hold on, I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it is. You over here?
No, that's not mine.
I'm over here.
That's your computer. The old Hornets court had a sick, like,
the honeycomb pattern?
No, they had a they had one. I don't know if it was a honeycomb. They had one that looked like they were a mid-tier, like, college basketball team back in, like, the late 90s. That one was sick.
I'm in the minority on this one, but I like the Memphis Tigers court. The one that's
doing so much.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking at the Hornets court right now. I can't remember. I think I like it.
Revolting.
What I don't like is when the court, as long as there's some real wood on the court, I can deal with it.
Uh-huh.
It's the courts that do, like, the paint and inside the 3-point mark is, like, let's say blue, and then outside of that is, like, red.
Yeah.
That's too much for me.
Unless it's, like, an outdoor basketball court that's got the green inside the key and the red outside or vice versa. I can live with that. But, the Hornets court, revolting.
The paint should be the only thing that's painted.
Actually,
Oregon court is the worst court of all time.
Oregon court's
tough. That's unnecessary paint.
It's a waste of paint.
Yeah.
But you'd probably think a different way if you had won the game against the Hornets.
No, I said it.
Celtics lost.
Turned the game on and was like, I'm revolted.
Oh, nice. All right. So I actually, that was a good test because we have so many takes out there all the time that sometimes you accidentally just, like, go against yourself.
Stephen,
you don't
A yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just found it. I said the court in Charlotte is low-key fire. So fuck yeah. I stayed consistent. I looked hard enough. I stayed consistent. I like it.
I'm
so
with
I guess we disagree. Yeah, I think it's low-key fire as of January 22nd. Low-key fire. And the Oregon court is the worst court of all time. I hate that
it
court.
It looks like it's warped.
Every time I see that court, I get fucking so mad.
Looks the like net, I mean, you mentioned the Nets one. The Nets one's pretty bad, too. It doesn't look like a basketball court.
Yeah.
It's a hockey
It's got,
arena.
Like, the weird off color. Coloring.
No, see, I like the Nets court because it reminds me of, now we're just talking courts, boys. We're just Francesing ourselves into just talking courts. I like the Nets court because it reminds me of Eastern Michigan's football field. The gray and the all gray.
Yeah, but that's like funny for the Maction. This is fucking,
I don't know,
NBA basketball.
I kind of like it. It makes me kind of do a double take. Like, is my TV fucked up?
So. I think a basketball court, we said, would be, if you were to be a tree that got cut down, you either want to be an NCAA bracket or a basketball court.
Yep. Money
would be the coolest thing to come back as.
Yep. Money. Maybe Fernando Tatis's bat.
Yeah.
That would be pretty sick, too. Money? Why? They just print new money all the time.
Yeah, but old money is the good money.
Oh, you're talking old
money.
Yeah. Okay. You're talking about the old, like, $20. How many? Is there a $500 bill?
No.
I think so.
Whitney Houston.
How? What is the
There's there $1,000
bill?
They printed up
Why
some
doesn't
big
anyone
ass bills
ever have $1,000 bills?
Who's on it?
I think it was just it was made exclusively for cocaine use.
Can you find that for us?
Yeah.
What's
there was a $100,000 bill.
I still
the Great
think
Depression.
one of my dumbest slash maybe most genius ideas is to counterfeit $2 bills because no one actually knows what they look like. And no one would ever think you'd counterfeit a $2 bill.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just counterfeited all the $2 bills, I think you'd be able to... When you see a $2 bill, you already think it's counterfeit just because it's so rare. Look, there you go, Billy. You just carry a $2 bill around.
Yeah, I think it's lucky.
Yeah.
Not sure. This might be fake.
Hank, remember when I tried to pitch that to Mark Cuban and I asked you to go into the bank to get me a $2 bill and you came back and you're like, they don't have any.
Yeah, I was on my Billy shit.
Yeah, dude, that was your Billy shit.
You just can't do it in Clemson because Clemson has that weird thing where their fans, they bring $2 bills with them wherever they go so that they can demonstrate the impact of the Clemson fans traveling to different college towns because they spend so many $2 bills.
Oh, that's terrible. All right, Bill, Jake, did you find it?
I'm not seeing a date, so I don't want to report it.
Okay, that's fine. Don't report
just the
it.
Just CPI and yeah.
What? What is
it says the CPI was at an estimated 36.8 back in 1969. As of December 2019, the U.S. CPI set at over 256, meaning a $1,000 bill would be the equivalent of a relatively modest $153 bill.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
What does that mean? What did you just say?
That's...
I just want to know if there's a $1,000 bill out there.
There is. It was in a Friends episode.
There we go, Billy.
The $1,000 bill has Grover Cleveland on it.
Okay.
It initially had Hamilton, but then they were like, hey, it might be confusing to have the same president on two different bills.
Someone who works at a bank, let us know about what type of bills you got working for you. Don't tell us where your bank is, but just let us know.
How many people are going to tweet at us being like, yo, Hamilton wasn't president?
A lot.
Probably a lot.
A lot, yeah. But he was a sick rapper.
Franklin was, though.
Let's go to Who's Back of the Week. Who's Back of the Week brought to you by...
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hank, who's back of the week?
Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah.
Threw a no-hitter today, so good
no,
for him.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't, Hank.
Yeah, he did.
No, he didn't.
Nah.
No, it was a seven-inning game.
Mm-hmm.
Not a no-hitter. Doesn't count as a no-hitter.
Yes, it does.
Because of Rob Manfred.
They should just let him keep going.
Yes.
And if he throws, if someone gets a hit off him in the middle of the eighth inning, they just end the game.
Wait, that's not a no-hitter?
It's not a no-hitter.
I mean, it's not. It's a seven-inning no-hitter, but they should. What I'm saying is,
yeah, but don't they give you no-hitters if the game gets canceled in like seven innings?
I don't know that. It's not a no-hitter. What he should have done, if he truly had presence of mind, he should have just walked a bunch of players until the Braves scored five runs, taken the game to extra innings, got it to nine, and then it counts as if a doubleheader game goes to nine innings, it does count as a no-hitter if you complete that.
Mm. Or he should have had his catcher drop a bunch of third strikes so that he could get 27 outs.
More strikeouts.
Yeah. 27 outs with no hitter. Yeah, I really do think
or his next two innings should count.
Like, it should be a fun little quirk in baseball. If they're going to do the seven-inning doubleheaders, it should be if a player has a no-hitter or a perfect game, the game goes till nine innings or when a hit happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then if a hit happens, they just end the game right away. Right then.
I agree with that.
So fix it.
How about the Braves, though, today? They got no-hitted, asterisked, and then I think they had like a one-hitter or a two-hitter.
Yeah, not a good day for the Braves. Not a good day for the Braves. Good to see
Madison. The one-hitter counts.
What?
MLB recognizes the one-hitter.
But not a no-hitter.
What do you mean they recognize the one-hitter? I
fucking love Major League Baseball.
That's just...
They just say that...
It goes down in the record books as a one-hitter, but not a no-hitter.
So that ball from the no-hitter asterisk, does that ball go to Cooperstown?
Probably not, because it's not a no-hitter.
I wonder, I need someone, I'm now asking a lot of the AWLs, we need to track down, tell us all the money that is
out
there.
By the way, I found the money.
No, let them do it, an assignment. Yeah. And then, are there more one-hitters than, are there less one-hitters than no-hitters?
I think probably, yeah.
Someone find that for me.
Because if you're like Nolan Ryan, and you know that you have a no-hitter, and you're in a situation where you've got like a 3-1 count, you're just going to walk the guy as opposed to throwing a pitch that he might hit.
What do you think, Hank?
It's got to be more science, math.
One hitters?
Yeah.
No, it's complete game one hitters.
Yeah.
There's more.
No chance.
For sure, 100%.
I don't know, man.
No chance.
Loser has to kill a debutante.
Okay.
A debutante?
Deal. Yeah. Bring it back.
All right.
It's probably like double or triple. It's got to be. I'm not a math guy, but
double or triple.
Complete game one hitters versus complete game no hitters. There's double complete game one hitters.
There's more. I'll bet that there's more.
Okay. All right. Well, someone find that stat for us. PFT, who's your who's back?
My who's back of the week is, well, I was going to have Roger Goodell hugging people, but we already addressed that. So I'll go to my backup. Novelty drinks.
Mm.
Novelty drinks are back big time. I was at a bar the other day, not to brag, and they had a sick novelty drink. And I think this summer I'm going to...
Soup?
If there's a novelty drink that's on the menu, I'm going to order it every single time. I'm talking like a punch bowl style thing or a margarita that's got a beer upside down in it. I don't know what it is, but I can't not get the novelty thing that they only serve at that location.
It's like asking the waiter or the waitress, like, what's your favorite thing on the menu?
Yeah.
You got to order it.
By the way, it's a sick flex to be like, hey, what do you recommend, the steak or the fish? And then the server will be like, the steak's really good. And then you go, perfect, I'll have the fish.
Yeah, I like right
doing,
in their face.
I like doing that. But I will order the novelty drink every single time that it's available, that's an option. I'm obsessed with them. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Always have a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
Always.
You just feel like you're accomplishing something.
Yeah. Yeah. When they bring out the big-ass margarita with a bunch of bottles of beer in it and shit. It's fucking cool. Just a cool thing to do. We should make Coors Light make a novelty drink.
Yes.
That would be sick.
Colorado
you already
Kool-Aid.
Have it?
It should be
a blue snow cone.
Ooh.
Or the Colorado Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a Coors Light that just has like a little bit of red food coloring in it.
Perfect. All right, my who's back of the week is parenting, because Chad Ochocinco had one of the funniest exchanges with his daughter that I don't even think he realized. I don't know. It's hard to figure out with him because he's a very funny guy, but I think he was dead serious. So he posted a screenshot of his conversation with his daughter, and his daughter said, Daddy, and he said, yes, ma'am. And she said, let me know when you go to Token, Miami, to get more shoes. I'm going to come with you because I want to get these Yeezys that they have. And he said, you got to get a job. I worked at McDonald's by Edison to attain extra stuff I wanted in high school. And she essentially says, when I finish school, I'm getting one. The old Billy football answer. And how could I get a job when I have to do high school and track and all these things? And Chad Ochocinco replied, I caught the bus to school, then went to football practice, caught the bus to McDonald's for a 6-hour shift, all while maintaining a 2.2 GPA and being a star athlete. So, Chad, well, I don't know if he was joking or not, but that is such a hilarious flex to be like, look how hard I worked, and I fucking rocked nothing but, like, C's.
I think it's even more impressive that he still remembers what his GPA was.
Well, 2.2.
If it's a 2.2.
Yeah.
Like, if it's anything below a 3, like, you could ask me what I got in college. I'd be like, somewhere between a 2.5 and a 3.5.
Someone replied very funny on Twitter, because everyone was roasting him. 2.2 GPA was trending on Twitter. And someone was like, dude, you don't maintain a 2.2 GPA. That's
sure
not.
No.
Like,
if you're trying to stay eligible for sports, that's a fucking grind. That is a grind.
That's how he knows what his GPA was to stay above 2.2.
Oh, man.
Was 2.2 the limit, you think? Or
think
was
it 2.0?
Depends on the district.
2 probably is the limit.
I think, no, because I think 2.2 is a C minus. So he has to just stay above a D.
Wouldn't 2 be a C?
Yeah,
1 would be a D?
2 is a C.
Yeah. It depends on the system.
Well, isn't it 4 is an A, 3 is a B, 2's a C, 1's a D, 0's an F.
But there's stuff like...
You have to be above a C.
APs and 4.5s and stuff.
I don't think that Chad was...
Yeah, if he was maintaining...
No, but that affects the GPA limits.
But I'm pretty sure 2's a C.
Yeah, but it's more like if you get AP, you can have a 4.5.
Isn't it? Isn't 2 a C?
Yeah.
Or maybe 2...
It depends on the system.
2 is a C.
Or is it a C minus? Now I'm starting. Now Billy's getting in my head.
In the standard, it's 2 is a C.
Okay.
Yeah.
3 is a B, 4 is an F.
Yeah.
What was your GPA?
I got a little nervous there.
In high school?
Yeah.
I think I had a 3, 4, 5 in high school.
2.2 maintain that.
She's getting.
I had
degrees.
A 2.3, and that was some. There was some maintenance that was necessary.
you had to go out and cut the grass every now and then. Yeah, make sure you get that 2.2.
Yeah.
All right, Billy, what's your who's back?
My who's back of the week is J-Rod. Jennifer Lopez and A-Rod were seen going out to dinner in L.A. We, you know, mourned their breakup, but love is a chance.
No, I think they're just being friends.
Yeah. Shout out A-Rod who got vaccinated. No big deal.
My other who's back is Monster Trucks. DMX's funeral had a sick Monster Truck. And in a very somber moment, it was nice to see that DMX's Rough Riders, they were still riding.
It was cool as hell.
So cool.
Shout out my son, who is probably one of the biggest DMX fans out there, because there was so much traffic in Brooklyn yesterday that he puked all over himself in the car because it was stop and go. So that was kind of like a one last, like, you know, like for DMX.
Uh-huh. He poured one out for him?
Yeah, he was just like, this sucks. We're in the car. I just missed DMX. I'm going to puke all over myself real quick.
Remote draft live streams are back.
Are you just piling this on because you're trying to... Just a little. Okay, all right, keep going.
Remote draft.
Billy's stat compiling now. He's stat padding.
Yeah, this is garbage time.
This is the fourth quarter of his,
take mine
his career.
I'll give mine to you.
And he's just like, no, I'm trying to get as many who's back.
I have more.
Possible.
I have more. So like, I know not everything's going to be remote like it was last year, but like, remember like moments like the CD Lamb phone. Taking back the Vrabel household was just ridiculous, and Belichick had a dog,
dog
picking people.
Dog
all right, jam. Next one. Keep
my
going.
Next
I
one
love
is identity.
This is fucking awesome.
Identity
Billy.
Theft.
Uh-huh.
There's a drug dealer in England who's pretending to be Conor McGregor and selling drugs, being like, "I'm Conor McGregor. And I'm actually selling drugs and trying
the
to convince."
Best part
people.
About this is that Billy's gonna fucking when he's like, "See all I've done." He's gonna be like, "I average 1.75 who's back of the weeks a week," and it's like then you break it down.
Uh-huh.
His game log, he had 15 in his last episode before his break. All right, keep going.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Oh, come on. You have one more?
Oh. Full counts?
Full crowds.
Full crowds. Full crowds. Crowds. Okay. Well,
UFC.
No, I said fans were back the other week.
Yeah.
So.
That
so
was
your
sick.
Old who's back is back.
Yeah.
Fans.
Double count it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fans, similar sounding words.
Yeah. It was sick that the UFC fight, like seeing all those fans. And also soccer had some fans.
Knockouts are way cooler when there are fans there. If there's no fans during a knockout, you kind of feel like a pervert watching it.
Yeah.
But if there's other people, if you can see other people getting excited about violence, you're like, okay, I feel good about it.
Yes, everyone raging together.
Yeah. You guys think Joe Rogan does the reactions now on purpose? Or do you think he's genuinely reacting?
No, I think his brain is just, the nootropics are just firing at an insanely fast rate.
As someone who's been in the ringside on the call, Big Cat.
What was the...
It was two. He did,
which one
he
was
twice.
The one that was most viral?
I think the Thug Rose one.
Yeah. Okay. But the Weidman kick definitely deserved it. Like, when he tried to step
I don't think,
on
I think
his...
the two. I think the two reactions
knockouts?
Were Thug Rose and
then maybe
the
he's trying to ham it
the
up
Masvidal
a little.
The Masvidal one. He actually once commented on, like, he understands the importance of video and going viral. So that I think he, like, I think he's definitely...
But I also think that that's just Joe Rogan being stoked in his natural environment.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like that and a guest talking about zombie deer disease. We get the exact same facial reaction out of him.
Yes, absolutely. Or how many guns he's stockpiled and how much bison meat he's been eating. It's the same level of stoke.
Do you think that eventually we'll get to a point where Joe Rogan buys his own bison and he just eats it raw while it's still alive?
Uh-huh.
That's like the ultimate amount of protein.
Just nibbles off of it?
Yeah, just like, because first you have to get close enough to bite it,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to get away, and it's raw, and the meat probably still has, since it's still alive, it's probably even faster twitching.
Yeah, that's true. We'll get there. All right, let's get to our interview. We got Todd McShay. We're going to talk some draft with Todd McShay. Some actually awesome anecdotes about a couple of the guys, Devontae Smith and Trey Lance. Before we do that...
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, here he is, Todd McShay. Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. He's a recurring guest, friend of the program. It is Todd McShay. You're going to see him on draft night, on Thursday night. We're finally here, draft week. Todd, thank you for joining us. I was just reading your latest mock draft. Is there, I don't know the answer to this, and I feel like a fool. Is there one final one that's coming out right before the draft? Do we still have one more iteration?
Yeah, thank goodness. Although, you know, sometimes the second or third one's better than the fifth and the last one. So, but yeah, we do. Mel and I do one the night before the draft. So Wednesday night we'll do it, and it'll be on .com, ESPN.com on Thursday.
Okay, great. And do you get credit? Like, if I were you, I would just take credit for any right answers I had through the five or six mock drafts I did. Do you do that?
I'd love to, but no one seems to care. But I mean, it's amazing. This year, especially with teams not being able to meet face-to-face with a lot of these prospects. Like, I talked to three general managers today, one head coach and one director of player personnel, I think is his title. And it's amazing just listening to all the scoop and the buzz that they're getting and how different it is from one team to the next, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I could go through 15 different scenarios just in the top 10 alone in terms of what everyone's hearing. We know Trevor Lawrence is going number one overall. I know for a fact Zach Wilson is going number two overall to the Jets. After that, it's going to get real interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, so you have Mac Jones going number three to the 49ers. That's the one that it feels like the longer Mac Jones has gone without playing football, the higher he's climbed up the draft rankings here. Do you think that that's kind of what Kyle Shanahan's looking at? You think he traded up to get Mac Jones, or is it a possibility that that's a smokescreen? Are you being smokescreened right now?
I'm always worried about it, but what I'm told is, and from people that I really trust in the league, is that the personnel department would like to take Trey Lance from North Dakota State, but Kyle Shanahan, the head coach, wants to take Mac Jones. So how do you pick, if you're a personnel department and you've got a head coach who's a quarterback guru and an offensive mind, how do you pick against what he wants? You know, I just don't see that happening. So that's going to be interesting to see if they wind up going with Lance. But I would bet money on Mac Jones going three. And then four, everyone thinks that Atlanta's taking a quarterback. And who knows, maybe they'll surprise me. But I've talked to another really reliable source that thinks that they're going to take Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida. So it could be quarterback, quarterback, quarterback for the first three picks. And then Pitts, the tight end, could come off the board at number four to Atlanta if Atlanta doesn't move out of that number four spot. And if they do take Pitts at four, then the big question is, because you got five quarterbacks, and Lance in this scenario would be available, and Justin Fields from Ohio State would be available. And now you're looking down, Miami's not going to take a quarterback. Cincinnati, I should say, at five is not taking a quarterback. Miami's not. And then you get to Detroit at seven. They're not going to. They're going to take a wide receiver or a linebacker or Penei Sewell, the Oregon offensive tackle. And then the next team on the board that I'm told that there's a chance that could take a quarterback is Carolina at number eight. That could be the big surprise of the first round.
Interesting.
You trade for Sam Darnold. You kind of got your guy. They lost eight games by one score. And talking, you know, to their coaching staff, everyone I talked to in that staff said, if we just had a guy in the fourth quarter, we could have won four or five of those games that we lost. So why do you bring in another quarterback? But you got Sam Darnold for just $5 million next year and only on a 2-year deal. So it might be ownership saying, hey, let's make sure that we're covered for the next 10 years rather than just worrying about next year.
So I want to go back to what you just said about Kyle Shanahan, a question that popped in my head. How many, mm-hmm. and you don't have to name names, but how many teams in the NFL does the coach have kind of de facto final say when it comes to who they're going to draft, more so than the personnel department and maybe even more so than the GM himself?
That's a good question. And not many teams would be public about it. I would say less than 10, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Belichick certainly in New England.
Right.
He runs the whole show. And this is just case specific. You know, John Lynch and that personnel staff, they're gonna make all the other picks.
Right.
But Kyle, because he's such an offensive guy, how do you draft a quarterback that's not what your head coach wants?
Right.
You know, I think that's kind of where it kind of the tug and pull is in terms of just figuring out what's best for the organization. So there's, I mean, and then you have, anytime it's a quarterback, especially in the top 10, ownership is always involved. You got to get the green light from the owner. So it's always interesting. But I mean, again, like, you got the three teams at the top taking quarterbacks, and then you've got Carolina, who I'm told the owner, who's a progressive owner, he's got a ton of money. He wants to bring in another quarterback just to make sure that they're set for the next several years. And then after that, at 9, Denver, nobody knows what Denver wants to do. Are they going to stick with Drew Locke, or are they going to take a quarterback at that spot? And then the wild card is there a team trying to trade up? You know, if Justin Fields falls to, you know, if he gets to 7, is there a team like New England? And I don't think it's going to be New England based on my sources. I think New England's more likely to trade back than they are to move up. But could it be Chicago at 20 trying to make a big move, trying to go up to get Justin Fields? So that's going to be the most interesting part of the draft, I think, is when we get down to the final one or two quarterbacks and you get past Atlanta, is there going to be movement? And we typically see a lot of movement.
The Chicago thing obviously is interesting because I do think that they are in a spot, and you see it all the time with the front office and a coach. They're on borrowed time. So really the only way they get out of this is Andy Dalton somehow gets them to the playoffs, or they draft a guy who shows a little bit of something at the back half of the season, and then they can sell it like, that's our guy, we got our guy. So do you think – I always assume they would just get someone in the second round. You think that they could potentially try to trade up if someone falls?
I think they could try to, but they've been stuck in this middle ground in free agency and in the draft. You know, like when you're picking at 20, you have to give up – you're talking about 3 ones – and more change to go up to 7, let's say, and get ahead of Carolina to go get a quarterback. And if you have ownership that's not convinced that this is our GM moving forward, are you going to allow this guy to make a move that's going to, you know, leverage your organization for the next several years? That's where I think they're in a tough spot.
Yeah.
So I my guess is that we're going to see the quarterbacks come off the board all 5 by 9. I think Carolina is going to be in play. I think Denver could be in play. I don't see another team. Washington at 19 could try to move up, but again, you're giving away so much, and they have a good football team. It'll be interesting. You know, I don't know how it all lays out, but I do know where all these teams are kind of leaning in terms of where they want to go. But which team is going to be the one that makes them move up the board? And if you don't get a guy in the first round, as you mentioned, there are 3 guys that I think are going to be drafted in the second round. Davis Mills from Stanford, who started just 11 games but was a 5-star recruit. I think he was the number one recruit coming out of college. And I talked to David Shaw a couple of years ago, and he's like, we'll never have another Andrew Luck. But he's the closest thing that we've had since and maybe we'll ever have in terms of physical tools. And there are a lot of teams that are intrigued by him. I'm told Washington, Chicago, and New England all have interest in him in the second round.
Hmm.
Then Kellen Mond from Texas A&M, who's a 4-year starter, very inconsistent but extremely talented, big arm, mobile, big physical dude, and got better in terms of decision-making and his accuracy this past year. And then Kyle Trask is another guy. I actually heard a rumor today talking to a GM that Tampa Bay could be interested in bringing him in late in the first round.
Huh.
So, you know, Vegas set it at 5.5, and I kind of laughed at that. I was like, there's no way there's going to be a sixth quarterback. But Vegas, you know, Vegas is always smarter than me. So,
yeah.
So, maybe Trask is that guy that sneaks into the late first round. And it seems like every year we see a guy, whether it's 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, that a team is willing to move out and get good compensation, and a team is afraid to go to bed that night after the first night of the draft without the quarterback that they really want.
Right. Mm-hmm. They start to panic. It was like that one year, was it 2011, where you had Jake Locker and all those guys go in a row. So do you think if all five quarterbacks get taken like in the top 10, top 11, there's, besides the Patriots, what would be a team that you would think might panic and shock us by moving up to take, I don't know, either Trask or you know, any of the other guys that you mentioned?
Yeah, I think those teams I just mentioned. I think Washington, especially with the love that I'm hearing about, you know, what they think Mills can be and how they could develop him. I think New England's intriguing. I mean, what if I can never get Bill Belichick's draft right, so don't even ask me. But if you spend all this money in the offseason and you bring back Cam Newton on a short-term deal for backup money, basically, at the quarterback position, and you've kind of solidified, I know they still have needs, but you've solidified tight end, certainly. You brought in some receivers, some edge guys. Like they spent more money, I believe, and I got to double check this, but I think they spent more money in free agency than any team in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
And they took advantage of having a ton of cap space in a year where, you know, the money in the cap went down in terms of what you could spend. So you're in a perfect spot to try to go solidify that quarterback position for the next several years, but it has not been Bill Belichick's MO over the last several years. I mean, but why would it be? That's, I keep going back and forth on this, because if I had Tom Brady for 20 years, I wouldn't want to spend a first round pick on a quarterback. I would want to bring in guys like Jacoby Brissett and, you know, Jarrett Stidham and all the other guys that they brought in the second to fifth round. But this is the year it seems like they're pressing. Mm-hmm. They're finally, you know, they've had an off season without the playoffs. They've self-evaluated. They know they don't have Brady to make up for all the sins that every other position has had on that roster. And so they realize that they've got to get better, and they did it. But now you need a quarterback for your future, unless you're just convinced that Cam Newton can be your guy for the next 2-3 years.
Uh-huh.
And then the other team, again, is Chicago. So I think it's Washington 51. I'll double check here. I think Washington's 51, Chicago's 52. And then if Denver doesn't go quarterback in the first round at 9, they're sitting at 40. So those are the teams that I think are going to be the most likely to be the movers in the second round, and then New England as well, picking at 46 in round 2.
We're going to get back to Todd McShay in a second. Before we do, hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike. If you want to join Buns of Anarchy, wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. And now, more Todd McShay. So I know that you have Trevor Lawrence as the best quarterback prospect that you've seen in nearly a decade. I don't know if that's a comparison to Andrew Luck. My guess is probably Luck would be the other guy that would be maybe a little bit above him.
Yeah, it's the second highest grade I've given to a quarterback since Andrew Luck.
I'm not going to ask you if you think he loves football, because I feel like that conversation has been had. But I will ask you, are you concerned that his hair's too long? Because long-haired quarterbacks don't win Super Bowls.
Didn't Brady...
No,
we looked through it.
He lost that year.
It's basically, I think Kenny Stabler is like the only one.
And he was like a little shaggy. He was, I wouldn't call it long
hair. You guys are all over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some people are talking about neck size being the key indicator as opposed to hand size. I actually think I would not take a quarterback that has hair as long as mine. I think, like, I wouldn't draft myself. I'd be like, who's this dirty hippie?
Yeah. I mean, I would never draft you.
that's why you're the best.
No, he's an interesting cat, man. He's so down to earth. I mean, think about what he went through this past offseason with all the social injustice, taking over leadership on that as a white quarterback, right? And being the leader of his team and kind of, you know, just focusing on what was important to his teammates. And then with COVID, and he didn't have to play either. He could have opted out.
Yeah.
And would have been the number one overall pick, but he came back and he battled. And, you know, and they had another really good run. He's 38-2 as a starter. I've done 9 games the last 3 years as a sideline analyst, is I guess what they call me. And I stalked him on the sideline. You know, I was almost weird. He probably should have, you know, gone to court to get me out of the stadium. But I just wanted to see how he reacted. And he was always so steady. And I love that about him. Now he's going to have to develop from a Clemson offense that is not an NFL scheme, if you will. And there's a couple small things that he's going to have to improve upon. But this dude is everything you want at the position, because he has the poise, he has the leadership, and then obviously all the physical tools. It doesn't take a super scout to figure out that this guy who's, you know, 6'5" and a half, 215 pounds with a rifle arm and the mobility that he has is physically, you know, talented enough to be a star in the league. But I love the way he carries himself.
So along that line, I do love that you are at a lot of these games, because I do think that there's something you can pick up from being at a game, especially being on a sideline, that you can't pick up on film. Who's the guy that you have seen on the sideline and how they interact with their teammates or how locked in they are, or he's just that dude who maybe not doesn't show it on the film, but you know that's a guy who like will translate to the NFL?
I mean, I see it on the film, but Devontae Smith has been the most fun guy to watch the last 2 years in college football. There is honestly, if anyone who loves football, I could bring them down on the field and have them stand 6 feet away from Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, and then the year before Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, and to listen to those four. There's an offensive bench, right? The offensive linemen sit on the bench, the quarterbacks there, you know, around, and then some of the other position guys pull up chairs and kind of circle around. The coordinator comes in, or the offensive line coach comes in. What they're always sitting on this back bench. And they come off the field and they chirp at each other. I mean, they get in each other's face. And then they go over to Steve Sarkisian, who was the offensive coordinator at Alabama, and start yelling at him like, hey, they're showing cover two, but it turns into quarters coverage. And like, their football intelligence and their competitiveness, I've never seen. And I've been doing this for, I don't know, 9 years, I think, being on the field. And just listening to coaches and players and all that, I have never seen anything like it. And I talked to Sark about Devontae specifically, because I mean he's what, 170 pounds?
Yeah,
he's so lean. He doesn't look the part. And I see what I see on tape. He's silky smooth and he knows how to separate and all that. But I asked Sark, like, what do you see from him in practice and in games that you can't actually see on tape? And the thing that he said was, I've never had a receiver in all of my years of coaching. And you think about where he's been, you know, in the NFL, USC, et cetera. I've never had a receiver come over on the sideline and give me as much or more information than I got from a quarterback in terms of the recall of what he saw, what they're trying to do, how we can leverage it, and so on and so forth. So that's what makes him special.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And that's also like, he's one of those guys that if you watch the game, you're like, how is he not going to be a top 10 pick? And then the size thing dings him and everyone's like, well, you know, 166 pounds. But I saw this is the lightest wide receiver class, I think, of all time. All these guys are kind of smaller. And I think that's probably more where the NFL is going in terms of not being able to hit guys the same way.
Yeah, and they're all running 4.2s and 4.3s.
Right.
And, you know, whether you can't compare these numbers to what the combine numbers would be, because they're you know, you don't know. you know, Ohio State, I've been convinced for 20 years of doing this job that they run a 38-yard 40.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd. Yes. Todd, thank you. We asked Daniel Jeremiah about this last week because it's my theory that some colleges, they shorten up specific section of their practice fields. So, you know, their field turf, they're permanently, you know, marked with the yard markers. My theory is that they have a specific section that's less than 40 yards. The hashes are a little bit closer together, or the yard markers are a little bit closer together, just so that when they do a pro day, they can get away with running like a 38-yard dash instead of a 41. And Daniel Jeremiah was like, no, because the scouts measure it before every run.
Yeah, they do. They bring out the tape and they measure it. I only say it jokingly. But what is different, though, is – and you see it at the combine, too. You know, have you ever watched the NFL Network at the combine?
Yeah.
And it comes out and it'll say, like, you know, Johnny Smith ran a 4.31, and everyone loses their mind. And then later in the day, the official numbers come out from the, you know, from the actual timing.
Yep.
The electronic, and it's a 4.49. So that's the difference. People just get trigger happy with their thumbs, or with their index finger working the stopwatch, but anyway, the to your point, this year's class is, yes, it's lean and it's not a ton of perimeter guys, but the speed and then the amount of slot receivers that bring versatility, it's special. I mean, Jamar Chase is unique, and it. At the end of the season, I was like, yeah, Devontae's going to be the number one pick, and he's number one wide receiver off the board because he's coming off the best season that I've ever seen, and maybe in the history of college football, single season for a wide receiver. Won the Heisman, did what he had to do, and they lost Jalen Waddle at Alabama, and he just kind of took over. But then I went back to 2019 and watched Jamar Chase set single season SEC records at wide receiver with Justin Jefferson, who I think he had, 88 catches for Minnesota this past year.
Yep.
as a rookie. And just, he was the guy. And he's just so physical and dominant in terms of getting off press and separating and after the catch. But then you got Devontae Smith, who's undersized but explosive. You've got Jalen Waddle, who's, again, a slot receiver that you can move around and do a bunch of different things with. And I think he's the most explosive player in this draft when you put the ball in his hands and give him he doesn't even need a little space, but once he has it in his hands. But then just going down the line, like Elijah Moore, the wide receiver from Ole Miss, is so, you know, overlooked because he didn't play for a great team. But he's the fourth best receiver in this class.
Yeah,
and then you get Kadarius Toney from Florida, Rondale Moore from Purdue, Tutu Atwell from Louisville. I mean, we had 14 receivers taken in the first two rounds last year. It may have been 13. I think we could have 14 or 15 again this year.
Wow,
I mean, okay. that's how good this group is.
Who's the biggest butt guy in this draft? And before you answer, you're going to get bonked, so I'm going to explain the question. When Nick Saban was saying that you have butts and you've got ands, and you want to be an and guy. So when a coach is getting a call from a professional team leading up to the draft, you say he can do this and he can do that, because the stuff that comes after the butt, if you say he can do this, but that's when you start to get dinged. Who is the guy that has, like, the biggest butt in terms of – like high upside, but watch out for this one big weakness in his game?
I'm glad you explained that, because I started to look at my list of players and trying to think of the biggest ass in this class.
Well, yeah, you can do that.
You
too.
Can definitely.
It
do
might
that.
Be the same guy, because yeah. I don't know. Maybe you're gonna say it's Sewell. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe his ass is too big, and that's the butt.
Uh huh.
to answer your original question, I'm going to go with Jason Owe from the edge rusher from Penn State. I mean, this guy, he ran, I think, a 4.38 at his pro day. He's 255-plus pounds, and he has all the physical tools that you look for. But he didn't have a sack. He didn't have a sack last year. I mean, it's hard, and he had a lot of pressures, and you can look up, you know, the PFF numbers in terms of pressures and hits and all these different things. But he didn't get home. And if I'm going to draft a guy in the first round, and I love the traits and I love the physical tools, but Jason Owe from Penn State to me is one of the hardest evaluations, simply because if you can't get a sack as an edge rusher, then what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All but no sack.
That's big. What here's another but I want to throw out to you. Trey Lance, obviously people love him, but he's only played one season. So how do you evaluate that? Like, how do you sit there and, like, he's only played one season. I don't want to bring up bad memories, but the last guy who only played one season, Mitch Trubisky, it didn't work out that well because he only had one season to look at and be like, here's how he does against this competition.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, Trubisky, Mark Sanchez is another one. If you study the history of the quarterback position in the draft, one of the greatest correlations between being drafted and having success in the NFL is starts, which sounds crazy, right? But they've kind of changed with the transfer portal, with obviously this past year with COVID and some of the limitations. It wasn't his fault. Like, he had no, if they played 10 games, he would have played 10 games.
Right.
They played one. But the biggest problem is he started 17 games at the FCS level. Then you watch the tape, though, and you see a guy whose accuracy needs to improve. Then he has everything else that you look for in terms of the size, the competitiveness, the leadership, the toughness, the mobility, extending plays, the ability to drive the ball down the field vertically. So I would love, for his sake, I would love to see Trey Lance wind up in either San Francisco or, even better, Atlanta. Okay. And I don't think Atlanta's going to take him. But the reason I say that is exactly to your point. He needs time, and he needs to. Patrick Mahomes came in the league and his mechanics were a mess. He came from a scheme, that air raid offense that really didn't translate, especially at the time. And he came in and I did the Chiefs games for 2 or 3 years, the preseason games. And I remember sitting down and talking to him. And he's like, Todd, I got to be honest with you. I didn't know how to identify the Mike linebacker. It was something I had never had to do in my career. And like, that's one of the simplest things. You learn that in high school. Like, there's the middle linebacker, and that helps to set protection for the offensive line and so on and so forth. So he's like, if I didn't have this first year to sit back and have a quarterback in Alex Smith that was willing to actually – work with me and talk to me about how to be a pro and what to look for and the coverages and all those things, and didn't have Andy Reid and this coaching staff, I wouldn't be where I am now. And now you can make the argument that he's the best player in the NFL.
Yeah. Where did you have Patrick Mahomes in that draft?
Way too low. Don't bring it up.
Okay. That's why you brought that up.
Late in the first round. He was, and I said it at the time. I said it a bunch of times. He was the toughest quarterback I've ever had to evaluate, because here's what happens. So you sit down, and especially with the quarterbacks, normally with other positional players, you watch 6-7 games throughout the course of a year. And then in the draft process with quarterbacks, you have to watch basically every game, unless it's against an opponent that doesn't matter. And so I sat there, and I was so worried about, like, his footwork was off. Every time he went to throw, it looked like a shortstop, like, or throwing underhand. His feet were so far away from what you want mechanically. But then I would look down at my notes, and it would be like completion, right. You know, a perfect ball placement. And I didn't know how to process that at the time. Because he did everything wrong before the ball got to the wide receiver. But the end result was always there. And then he got in a situation where he had time to develop his footwork and get his timing right and to get away from that air raid system, but get in a system where they kind of adapted to what he wanted to be. It's just all worked out perfectly, and throw in all the weapons that he has, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not making excuses. I'm explaining the process. The process was brutal with him because I saw the talent, but I didn't know what to do with it.
I like that spin zone, though. You're like, my evaluation was correct. And then after the first year, if he had re-entered the draft after a year sitting behind Alex Smith, you would have had him first overall, right?
Of course.
Yeah, easy.
Done.
And my evaluation wasn't correct. Brett Veach is the GM of Kansas City. His was correct. And apparently, and I talked to him about this and to Andy Reid and a couple other people on their staff. Apparently, Brett had basically decided we're taking this guy when he's eligible next year. It was the year before. I forget the year that he was drafted. It was, what, 4 or 5 years ago. But it was the year before his final season in college when he walked into Andy's office and was like, this is going to be our guy. We got to get this guy. And that's why they made that big move to go up and get him.
That's crazy. So my last question, do you ever – this might be a stupid question. Do you ever think that some of the front offices are cheating off your work? Like, do they call you and then you give them your evaluation and then you're like, wait, I think they took that guy because of me. That would be a pretty cool thing, right?
No, they definitely don't. The only thing they do – it's funny because I mean, I have friends in the league and we talk, but we talk about like family vacations or what's going on, how is it on the road and stuff like that. We don't really start talking about where guys are going until about 10 days before. And that's why I have spent more time on the phone the last 4 or 5 days with guys in the league than I have probably in the last 4 or 5 months, because they're all trying to figure out what I'm hearing and where guys are projected to go. And they're taking that information. I'm sure they're calling Kuiper and Daniel Jeremiah, and then they're calling other guys in the league.
Stephen Chay.
Exactly. They want to get all the information they can get to try to figure out, okay, if we're going to move out of this spot, if we're going to try to trade up to go get a guy, or can we hang it, pick 8 or 9 or whatever it is, or should we move back because we can still get that guy and pick up an additional pick? That's probably the biggest thing in terms of my conversations with guys in the league and how they could utilize that information. And I got to be careful. I never talk specifics in terms of players, and I protect everything I'm hearing in terms of when teams tell me we want this guy. But even today I told a certain team that I had talked to another team and that you might want to reach out to this other team because if there's a certain player, and I didn't say the player, but if there's a certain player there, they may want to move up. And so you should probably have some dialogue with them.
Huh. I'm trying to do the math real quick. The Falcons, the Dolphins, and Ian Book. Did I get it?
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
Crushed
in
it.
Round three.
Crushed it.
I've got just one last thing, because we love all the lingo and all the scout talk that goes into the draft, all the different, like, you guys almost talk in a secret language sometimes. And when we can pick up on like a new phrase that's coming out and get ahead of that, we like to feel smart. So are there any deep scout terms that you guys use to describe players that maybe you just keep to yourself and you haven't put out there in the media yet, or don't say publicly? Just basically a cool phrase that we can steal from you about a player.
I don't know. I think I've used this on air, but you probably haven't heard it. But I find myself using this all the time now when I'm talking about defensive backs that are smooth, that they have oily hips.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or greasy hips, one of the two. You know, just when you see, you can just kind of see how, when you compare like the oily guys versus the stiff guys, it's so obvious to see on tape. And that's the best way I can describe it. Greasy or oily, just, you know, so smooth that they're not laboring. And then with offensive linemen that really struggle, and defensive linemen too, that struggle to redirect, I always call it the Titanic. And it's like, you know, like, good luck turning that thing.
Yeah.
The DK Metcalf.
I like that. Well, Todd, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Good luck on Thursday night.
I appreciate it, guys.
Don't stop giving Mel shit about being a weirdo with his pizza and his pumpkin pies.
Mashed potatoes.
Yeah, mashed potatoes, yeah. no debit card.
What kind of animal goes to the hotel room every single night after doing shows, orders a pizza, and takes the cheese off? First of all, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And then gets a side of mashed potatoes and slaps the mashed potatoes on top and uses that as the cheese.
He's gonna
so now you've lost yeah. you've lost 80% of the sauce. Uh-huh. You've lost all of the cheese, and now you're double carb loading on crust and mashed potatoes.
He's gonna live to like 1,000 though. He's gonna have the same life.
You beat me to it. Yeah. I was just gonna say, and then he wakes up and has pumpkin pie every morning and thinks that he's having something healthy because he has the fat-free whipped cream.
Yep.
And he's going to wind up. He's going to outlive me by 30 years.
We have to have him do a pizza review with Dave.
Yeah,
that would be so funny if they walked out and
Dave would lose his freaking mind if we didn't tell him to,
and he just walks out and just rips the cheese off and slaps mashed potatoes, and Dave's just like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, that honestly, I would watch it and laugh my ass off.
Oh my god, we gotta have that.
I mean, to Mel's credit, you did really botch the pumpkin pie a couple years ago on the air.
I did. I know. I have to go look back. I've checked the tape. I've studied it.
You have to
the
go.
Eye in the sky doesn't lie. Right?
Slice, spray, eat. Like individual bites get individual dollops of whipped cream on them, right? And you went in like a savage and put the whipped cream on the entire pie at once.
I was trying to do right by him, but I messed it up. That was one of my biggest draft fails.
Oh man! All right, well, Todd, thanks so much, man. We look forward to draft night on Thursday.
All right, fellas, take care.
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
I'm not crazy that the Oscars was not supposed to be tonight, right? I didn't know it was tonight. Is that usually in February?
I don't think that any movies came out this year. That's the big
King problem. Kong Godzilla, and they didn't even put it in there.
Well, that just came out.
I know, but
that was last year.
How's that not?
In Mortal Kombat.
They should have just known that it was going to come
Oscars
out.
Oscars is usually like March Madness.
Yeah, right. Isn't it like late February? I thought it already happened.
They switched the Oscars in the draft this year.
And
the
then
draft
I went
should have been last week, Oscars next week.
And then I just walked out to the main part of the office, and Jeff D'Lo and Ken Jack had like
looked battle like station.
Looked like they were landing Elon Musk's fucking rockets.
The command center. It looked like that guy that was landing the expedition rover or whatever on Mars from his house.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on here? Like, oh, Oscars tonight. Like, oh, didn't that happen?
The 2019 Oscars were in February, or February 24th, 2019.
Yeah, so it's always in February. So what the fuck? Why are they still, are the Oscars still lagging from COVID? Get your shit together, Oscars.
I bet
movie studios had to shut down for an entire year.
Yeah, man. This year there's going to be like no movies out. If you want to get a movie nominated for an Oscar, this is the year to do it. Boner Dogs.
Eat, pray, chug.
Eat, pray, chug, Billy.
How Billy got his chug back. I love it, Billy. You should do it. Yeah, that surprised me. All right. We should do, we got a Monday reading. So Monday reading, this one is a lot about the picture of this guy, but in the Orlando Sentinel, the Monday reading is, I love Disney World, but wokeness is ruining the experience. So this is by Jonathan Van Buskirk. Sick name, John. I think I'm going to actually agree with this guy eventually.
I mean, if you look at the picture of him, I don't think that you're going to be able to match his Disney knowledge.
So he has a picture, and it's off-centered, but behind him is a bunch of, like, Disney figurines? I don't even know what you call them. What do you call a doll when you're an adult?
They're collectibles?
Because I don't think you can call it a doll.
I think they're... What are they? I think they're just collectibles.
Yeah.
Investments.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you know what I'm saying, like... Kids can have dolls. Adults have...
Mannequins.
Decorations.
Figurines.
Yeah, dudekins. Yes.
Ask Jeff D'Lo.
Yeah, that's true. He does have a lot of...
Figurines.
Sex dolls.
Yeah.
And such. All right, here we go. My family and I have been loyal Disney customers for decades. We vacation at Disney World every year. We take a Disney cruise every year or two. Consequently, we spend way too much money in Orlando. So this is right off the bat. This guy's dedicated. Mm-hmm. And Disney people are freaks.
I don't like the fact that he is acknowledging that he has a problem, though.
Yeah,
he seems like a little bit too aware of the fact that he does spend too much time thinking about Disney World.
Yeah.
Like, Disney cruises, that's... I get why you would want to go to Disney World or Disneyland occasionally, but to be trapped on a boat with other adult Disney fans, that's like hell is other people. Hell is other stands of the Jungle Book. You
yes,
know?
I'm doing the math, though, here. How fucking lit are the years where he goes double-dipping? Because he said, we take a Disney... We vacation at Disney World every year. We take a Disney cruise every year or two. So there are years where he's double-dipping, and it's like a nonstop Wonderland.
Yeah.
Is that what Disney is, Wonderland?
Disneyland or Disney World. The most magical place on Earth.
Which one is which?
What do you call
World
the
World is Orlando. Land is California.
Got it. I have never... I haven't been to either. I was that kid who didn't go to either. Unfortunately, I am strongly rethinking our commitment to Disney and thus Orlando. This is now we're talking about some fucking dollars in Orlando's pockets.
How much money do you think this guy drops in Orlando in a given year?
A shitload.
Probably, I'd say five figs.
Yeah, mid five figs.
Mid five figs, probably.
For sure. The more Disney moves away from the values and vision of Walt Disney, the less Disney World means to me. Disney is forgetting that guest immersion is at the core. That's a buzzword, by the way. That's going to come back up. Guest immersion is at the core of its business model. When I stand in Galaxy's Edge or Fantasyland, I know I'm in a theme park. But through immersion and my willingness to set the real world aside, something magical happens. The spell is broken when the immersive experience is shattered by the real world. And boy, has Disney been breaking that immersion.
So he finds himself in Disneyland frequently, or Disney World frequently, and just pointing out, hey, this isn't right. This is not what Walt Disney had in mind. I've read several of his biographies.
Right. Like, why does Mickey Mouse have a hearing aid?
Yeah, why is Mickey Mouse not an actual mouse?
Right, exactly. Why does Mickey Mouse have a tin of skull in his pocket?
Why is Mickey Mouse wearing pants and Donald Duck isn't? Can I see Donald Duck's penis?
Good question. I also think there's a 10% chance this guy just learned the word immersion and was like, I'm going to use this in a piece.
I don't like the vibe that he gives in the picture because it almost seems like he's going for a Jimmy Buffett parrot head type vibe.
Right.
He's wearing the Hawaiian shirt. I don't think adult Disney fans are Hawaiian shirt type guys.
Yeah.
If they are, then I might have to reconsider my stance on the Hawaiian
Become
shirt.
One? This also, you know, maybe I'm way off, and I'm sure we'll piss off some Disney people, but isn't it for kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
Traditionally,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
immersion is just being a child.
Like, this is a park for kids.
This guy just wants to be
immersion,
a child again.
Children, yeah, that's your whole life is immersion.
Yes.
Everything is fantastical.
And it's probably amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't sports just a kid's game?
Shut up, Hank.
No.
No. Uh-uh. It's different.
No.
Because the players care as much as I do.
Yeah, not even close.
Yes, Hank.
It's real life. They're playing the game.
It's real to me.
It's absolutely real. Bad analogy. Bad. Bad.
Wasn't that?
Bonk.
I was asking
not horny
a
bonk.
I was
bad
asking
bonk.
A question.
Immersion shattering bonk.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer over your head like you were a cartoon. I'd drop an anvil on your head. I'd drop a piano on your head if you walk by me right now.
Just All ask right. some questions.
Recently, Disney announced that cast members are now permitted to display tattoos, wear inclusive uniforms, and display inclusive haircuts. Disney did all of this in the name of allowing cast members to express themselves. Now is where I kind of actually agree with him. I'm starting to turn here.
Right, I don't want to see like Ariel.
If Snoopy's got is Snoopy,
Snoopy's definitely Disney.
Is he?
No.
What is
Toy Story?
Peanuts. What dog am I talking about?
Pluto.
Pluto. If Pluto's got a Goofy, that's
Goofy,
what I was talking.
Goofy.
If Goofy's got a fucking like scorpion tattoo on his arm, I'm gonna be pissed.
I would kind of love that, honestly.
No,
as an adult, I would love to see Goofy walking around like carrying a knife on his hip. Has a barbed wire tattoo and just chain smoking.
I think I'm on Johnny Boy's side here. All right, here we go. The problem is I'm not traveling across the country and paying thousands of dollars to watch someone I do not know express themselves. I am there for the immersion in the fantasy, not the reality of a stranger's self-expression. I do not begrudge these people their individuality, and I wish them well in their personal lives, but I do not get to express my individuality at my place of business. I'm going to throw a flag there. I don't think Jonathan really going to tell us that he's never gone to work in a Disney shirt?
That's a good point.
Jonathan going to tell me that he doesn't have Disney fucking dolls at his desk? I'm going to throw a flag on that one, Johnny boy.
Also, if you work at, like, Target, are you expected to immerse yourself in being a Target employee? Like, when you walk into the store, are you just eat, sleeping, you're acting out, just like the entire mission statement of Target all the time?
Yes. Or Best Buy, the Geek Squad, that is true.
No, they're definitely nerds, yeah.
Yeah, they all have to be immersed into nerd.
You know what? The more I think about it, the more I do like going to places where there's immersion.
Yes. No, I'm kind of on his side, but I do want to say you're a hypocrite. Because if you're an adult Disney fanatic, there's a 0% chance you're not an adult Disney fanatic at your place of work as well.
Yes, everyone knows.
Like, not to pick on Jeff D. Lowe, he's got a bunch of dolls on his desk. I love it. Mm-hmm. I think it's his individuality. I think that we're at a place where you can express your individuality. But if Jeff D. Lowe was an accountant at one of the big three.
It just always sounds better. Yeah.
If he was an accountant at the big three, he would definitely have a couple, you know, what are those things called? Bop tours?
Funko Pops.
Jesus Christ. I'm out of my depth here. I don't know what any of this shit is called.
Inorganic lovers.
What?
That's...
Are you talking about sex dolls?
Yeah.
Okay.
Inorganic lovers. What's next? Is Disney going to end the rule bearing onstage cell phone use by cast members as an infringement on self-expression? Good point.
I love that.
Very slow.
Whenever somebody starts a sentence with "what's next," you can be sure that like the fiery takes from the depth of hell inside their brain are coming next.
Yes.
It's like, I'm going to get weird with it. Yep. So he's saying that if you let them have a tattoo, next thing you know, they're going to be calling their drug dealer on stage.
I'm finding out quickly that I know nothing about Disney because I'm struggling to figure out. Is Aladdin Disney?
Yes, Aladdin's Disney.
Oh, so it's Beauty and the Beast. It's Aladdin.
Snow White. Little Mermaid. Lion King.
Okay, all right. Lion King, good. All right, yeah. I got it. I'm on Disney. All right. More broadly, like many corporations, Disney has been politicizing its business. Full disclosure, I'm a Christian and a conservative Republican, so the people who run Disney and I do not see eye to eye. I actually appreciate that. He's just saying, hey, look, I know they think differently than me. All right, regardless.
Yeah, I do like that. I like the fact that until they took away his immersion, you can still do business with people that you don't agree with on everything, because spoiler alert, you're never going to completely agree with anybody about anything ever.
Right. They came for Jonathan's immersion and I said nothing.
Yes.
That's a problem. All right. Regardless, corporations have always made politically motivated decisions. Usually it is due to the desire to make a profit, but sometimes it is due to the values of the people in the corporation. Walt Disney used his corporation to express his patriotism during World War II and his pro-capitalism beliefs afterward. The difference today is that the people who run Disney are social media, use social media to scream to the whole world that a decision has been made for political reasons. Disney is in the process of taking the woke scalpel to the Jungle Cruise. Uh-oh. Ooh. Trader
Sam. That's not a good sentence.
No. The woke scalpel. Trader Sam is out because he might offend certain people. Every grown-up in the room realizes that Trader Sam... Who is... Let's Google Trader Sam
Trader seems like a euphemism.
Is this... Or maybe...
He was in the business of relocating people.
So he's a slave trader. I would say that's fair to pull that one. Let me see. I'm trying to find a picture of Trader Sam.
He's from the Jungle Cruise.
Oh, okay. Trader Sam, that was probably a good call. That was a good call by Disney. I'm going to side with Disney on that one. Trader Sam is, every grown-up in the room realizes that Trader Sam is not a representation of reality and is meant as a funny and silly character. Again, I think it's for the kids.
Yeah.
I don't think the grown-ups.
Wasn't Walt Disney, wasn't he into, like, eugenics?
Yeah, I think so.
He was a low-key.
Yeah, low-key not so good.
Yeah. It's the worst kind.
He's essentially asking for immersion into a more racist time.
Yeah, just immersion, but it's immersion.
It's immersion, okay, all right. It is no more based in racism than every Disney character of an out-of-touch white American dad, yes. Now that rules.
Uh-huh.
That rules what he just did. Because you make the fucking white American dads fat, and that's not cool. Most of us are fat, not all of us. The next time I ride Jungle Cruise, I will not be thinking about the gloriously entertaining puns of the skipper. I will be thinking about Disney's political agenda. That's a mood killer.
Uh-huh.
I'm going back and forth here, but if you can't enjoy this puns by the skipper, You're right. You've been immersion has been broken,
and I bet that he's probably heard the exact same puns probably hundreds of times.
Yeah, but it's still funny.
But still, when you're immersed in them and you hear the puns, you're genuinely excited by them.
Yes,
like I appreciate good writing.
Yes. All right. Disney proclaims that Splash Mountain must change because of its association with Song of the South. Disney owns Splash Mountain, so it can do what it wants. But if Disney screams at the top of its corporate voice, which is pretty loud, that it is changing it to appease a certain political point of view, now every time I look at the ride, I'm thinking about politics. I think that's a you problem, dude. In that you like look at a ride. Well, it's a you problem that you're going to Disney as an adult. I don't even know if this guy has kids.
Right. If you make anything that important in your life, you're going to be disappointed by something.
Something, right.
Yeah, very much.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this guy, we need to get a baseline of what politics is.
Correct.
I feel like people just say, like, this is politics. About anything they disagree with.
All right, so he goes on to say, Pirates used to be one of my favorite attractions. My family, oh, he does have family, okay. Would always ride, it's like, it's he, his wife, and
like five dolls.
Yeah, right.
He buckles up.
My family would always ride it first on our first day at the Magic Kingdom. Now we do not even ride it every trip. Wait. So he's kind of, he's admitting that he's still doing it.
Yeah, he still goes, but Big Cat, it's not every time.
Okay, when my family rides Pirates now, each of the change scenes takes us out of the illusion because they remind us of reality and the politics that force the changes. I like how he's like, hey, where's that thing? Oh, fuck. Immersion broken.
He's like, how come Uncle Remus doesn't work in the character breakfast anymore, bringing me my orange juice?
Dude, he really needs to, like, he just needs to take a break from Disney World. He's burnt out.
He's memorized
the shit too much.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's like, if you can notice the slightest change in a theme park, maybe you go too much.
So I think at some point, for most people, when they were if they were experiencing these rides, they would probably reach the level of like, oh, I don't believe the immersion anymore. Maybe after the second time or third time, because you start to learn the routine.
Yeah.
And it's not exciting or new anymore. This guy just has an insanely high tolerance for repetition and immersion.
Right.
So like there's a part of his brain that doesn't get bored with repetition until like 50 or 60 times through. And even then, still not fully.
So he ends it with Disney World is going to lose us as customers if it continues down the path. I do not want to have Disney World taken away from us because Disney cares more about politics than happy guests. The parks are less fun because immersion and thus the joy is taking a backseat to politics. Disney, please return to the values of and vision of Walt. The customer experience should be the core of your business model. Immersion should not be sacrificed on the altar of political correctness and appeasing the Twitter mob. I actually think this guy might rule.
So I like.
I think he might rule. I think I might be a fan of his.
I like anyone who's that passionate about something that I don't care about at all. That's
right.
I like his brain.
I think the fact that he spends this much time thinking about Disney is weird, but also kind of cool because, I don't know, it's just cool to be that excited about anything.
It's cool to have people that care more about a company's product than the actual company.
Correct.
Does.
Correct.
Those people are fascinating to me. Now, there was a counterpoint, a rebuttal that was published in the same newspaper, the Orlando Sentinel, by Cody Vincitore. His article, I also love Disney World, and here's why wokeness critic is wrong. And then he wrote a response letter fact-checking the grooming standards and things like that, where he was like, they won't fire somebody if they have a small tattoo. He's downplaying the immersion. I don't think this guy understands the concept of immersion.
We might have to take a trip to judge for
ourselves.
Yeah, to get immersed and figure out how far this immersion goes or stops.
Mm-hmm.
I just love anyone who's this passionate about anything.
Yep.
He fucking wrote, he not only spends mid five figs on Disney every year, he wrote a fucking commentary article being like, they're about to lose those mid five figs.
Mm-hmm.
So
the crux of the response one is just saying, like, if you can't deal with organizations that treat cast members with basic human decency and respect, we don't want your vacation dollars. So, like, I don't think he has the authority to say that on behalf of
Walt
Disney.
He definitely doesn't.
You don't know. You can't put words into Walt Disney's cryogenically frozen head.
They should also just any changes they should just make without announcing it, because then the immersion stays real.
Right.
Like, don't say we let people have tattoos now. Just let it happen, and then the immersion isn't broken.
Because
I think that's probably his. This guy, Jonathan, he has alerts on, Google alerts, for any change at Disney. So every time there's a change, whether he's there or not, the immersion is broken. And now once you break his immersion over and over and over, the guy's a broken man.
I think what it comes down to is that this guy just longs for when he was a child.
Yeah,
he just misses being a kid.
Which, again, it's a kid's
And so anything that changes, it takes him out of that feeling he had the first time he saw Ariel's seashell bra. It's like people who still think that the Dallas Cowboys are great because they won Super Bowls in the 90s.
Right.
And anytime something changes with the team, it shatters that immersion.
Yes.
But you still keep going and paying money.
Yeah, what do you mean Jerry's not the best? Last homework assignment for the listeners, I would love to hear from a fully immersed Disney fan and let us know if it is true the immersion has been broken.
Yeah.
I do think this guy rules, like, on just the base level. Take all politics out. I just think his life weirdly rules because he's, like, able to get excited about shit.
I love weirdos. Yeah.
Right.
Weirdos that are passionate about things.
I'd love to have them on the show.
They're fascinating. I'd also like to hear from somebody who works at Disney who is a character that takes pride in the immersion.
Yeah.
And, like, when you can tell if somebody's in a current state of being immersed.
And I'd like to have him on the show, too, but keep it stay in the immersion.
Stay immersion, yeah.
Right.
We'll just do a show where it's like Gaston just talking shit to this guy.
Right.
He's like, yeah, slap me in the face, daddy.
Yeah, okay. All right, so it's a lot of homework out there. Good show, guys.
Degrade me. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Degrade me, cousin.
What were you going to say, Billy?
Well, could like Gaston have like a controversial tattoo?
What would be controversial about Gaston?
I don't know. Let's say he was like a...
He's a member of the bourgeoisie?
Yeah, he's bourgeoisie. Would that be true? Cool?
I don't know.
Yeah. Also, how'd he get so jacked?
Exactly.
There were no gyms.
It would be funny if Disney went like over the top with inclusiveness and they let like scrawny dudes become Gaston.
I'd riot with Jonathan.
I would too.
Yeah, I'd be like, fuck this.
I want my Gaston to be like over the top, jacked as fuck.
Yeah.
Actually, like, I want Gaston to assault people in front of me.
Yeah.
That's what immersion means to me.
I'm on Jonathan's side, though. I think he rules. Come on the show. Tell us about immersion. Because, like, your life, people will laugh at your life. And I do think adult Disney people are kind of freaks. But that's okay. Everyone let their freak flag fly.
And it's good to have freaks out there because it allows you to feel good about yourself.
Even though we're freaks of our own way.
For doing a podcast talking about a guy who's
right,
a freak.
And also just, like, the amount of sports we consume.
No,
we're freaks.
No. Yeah. Hank's got to you.
Hank's got that. Hank, you're a freak for how much video games you play.
You're a freak for putting ice cubes on your dog's penis.
Nope. That's just a good dog owner. 99.
38.
18.
32. Slow lorises are venomous.
What is a slow loris?
Like really cute lemurs with the big eyes.
Oh. How are they 94. How are they venomous?
They have saliva that makes people go into anaphylactic shock.
Holy
shit.
That's
a sick superpower.
First 94 since opening day on August 27th.
Since opening day.
First day you did it.
Love it.
When we were on pace to have
we did 12 on that day.
Yeah. Shit.
Love you guys.
Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.